Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Chris Treece Show. I am, of course, your host, Chris Treece. I am very excited about my guest today. For those of you that know me, you know that I've spent the past 15, 16 years in the mortgage business. Well, today you are in for a real treat. We will be speaking with one of the major giants in the industry. Financial expert Dale Robbins Siegel recently took her 20 years of experience as an attorney and mortgage broker and rolled it into a book titled The New Rules for Mortgages. The book was actually released September the 1st of this year. Dale is a licensed attorney in New York and the owner of Circle Mortgage Group, a boutique mortgage broker in White Plains, New York. She also teaches several classes with several real estate schools there in the area, and as well as doing public speaking and teaching real estate professionals about the mortgage business. And I think she's been doing that for the past 10 years. So please welcome to the show, Dale Robbins Siegel. Dale, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great. Let's get right into it, because this is interesting. You're kind of hitting close to my heart with the whole mortgage business thing. So tell me about your new book.
The book, The New Rules for Mortgages, published by Penguin, is a very short, to the point, concise book on the new rules for getting a mortgage. I say short, it's about 200 pages, which is shorter than your average how-to book. And it's concise in that it gives you the basic process and the general guidelines, but then it gets into very specific items on credit scores, which is very important, your income and your assets. So new borrowers as well as current borrowers can understand how the new rules apply to them personally.
So it pretty much is designed for today's market. Would I be accurate in assuming that? Because, you know as well as I do, things have changed even as little as last year. In the mortgage industry. So is it more tailored to today's market?
I'll say yes. This book, my last draft that I did before I had to hand it in for printing was in March of 2009. So that makes it very current. The rules began to change in August of 2007. So after 2007, anything was old news. What we did was we revised it at least four or five times as the rules changed over the past 2 years to make sure that the reader was getting today's rules, which they pretty much stand, which is good. It's for anybody that's getting a mortgage or beginning the process anytime after, well, today, and hopefully this book will be good. You know, the details of the book will still be current for the next 12 to 18 months.
What are some of the high points that, say, for instance, a new borrower, if I was, you know, currently in the housing market and didn't know where to start, what are some of the high points in the book that people would need to pay attention to?
The high points in the book. The way we qualify and approve somebody to get a mortgage, there's two parts to it. There's your property, which would be the value and the condition of your home, and then there's you, the borrower. Considering you, the borrower, the guidelines for your credit scoring is much higher now. The bar, we go by FICO scoring, Fair Isaac and Company. The bar is set much higher, where the average FICO score should be over 680. FICO scores go from 350 to 850, 850 being the best. 2 years ago, you could have gotten a mortgage with a 500 FICO score, which is not very good. Today, most banks won't even take your loan application if you're under 680. So improving your credit score and making sure that you have the highest possible credit score is most important right now.
Do you have a chapter in the book that may be dedicated to how to raise your credit score, so to speak, or how to get in a position where you are able to buy a home later if you're not able to now?
Yes. It's actually chapter one called The All-Important Credit Score. It's also one of the largest, longest chapters that I have in the book because it is the most important. It's not a chapter on, you know, secrets or gimmicks. It actually shows somebody what makes up their credit score and how what affects their credit score negatively. Taking that information in reverse, it will show somebody how to improve their credit score. Because all you need to do basically is the opposite, you know. Being late on your mortgage payment or your car payment or your student loan will affect you negatively. Well, the opposite of that is make sure you pay your bills on time. That affects 35% of your credit scoring. So if people knew what they actually needed to do, you know, they might more consciously be aware of, you know, and it's not hard. It's just being responsible. So
and with you being
with
you being a practicing attorney, I'm sure there's a ton of insight, especially into that topic, because I'm sure that you deal with those credit issues with people every day. But I'm sure that they're going to listen to you a little bit more because, like I said, you are an attorney, and attorneys are able to get things removed or get things done the correct way when dealing with the three major credit bureaus as far as erroneous information.
I think that being an attorney, you know, I could be a DWI attorney and know nothing about credit, but because I have 20 years' experience in the finance industry, from experience, I could tell people what to do and how to do it. You know, the most important thing would be that people believe when they call up, I'll make this up, Sears, and Sears says, okay, we're going to, you know, yes, that was an error, we're going to correct this. People really believe that Sears is going to call the credit bureaus and remove it, even though they should. But the long and short of it is you have to do it yourself. So people call me up and they're like, all right, I called Visa and they told me they were going to fix it. And my response is, do you actually believe that they're going to do it? Or do you think you need to take that extra step to make sure that that erroneous item or old item was removed from your credit report? So a lot of it is just personal responsibility for making sure your own finances are in order.
Now, I know that one of the topics that you have in your book, because I'm sitting here reading some of the notes, talked about establishing an alternate credit file for foreigners and students. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think that may be a very interesting point to get across to our listeners.
Okay. Alternate credit file. A credit file is made up of the obvious, a mortgage, a car payment, major credit cards, which are Visa, MasterCard, and other items. A credit score, a FICO score, typically needs four active major trade lines. A trade line would be a Visa or a MasterCard, active for 24 months. People that are new to this country haven't established credit here, although they could have great credit from their country of origin, or students, or even people that never really liked credit and they used cash. You need to establish a credit profile in order to be qualified to borrow money. Therefore, if you need an alternative credit profile, you use things such as your rent payment. You write out a check every month to make a rent payment. You make a copy of the check, and you make sure that it's documented within your credit profile. If you can't get a credit card, if you can't get a Visa card because you have no credit history, then you can get a secured credit card. Capital One is always my best example. Capital One Bank, which is now a bank, will allow you to deposit, let's just say, $400 in a savings account, earn interest, and then they will give you a major credit card, Visa or MasterCard, to use, being secured by the money you have on deposit. The activity you have on your secured credit card will show up on your credit report and help you establish a credit score, which is what you need. So that's
you're basically building your credit file.
You're basically building your credit file from scratch using alternative things, rent, even a gym membership to take something crazy. If you join a gym and they take it out of your checking account every month, you can use that as credit. You can use utility bills. Even if your electric company or credit or telephone company do not report to the credit bureaus, you can ask them to report to the credit bureaus. And again, establishing credit. So it's all very important to do. And it's not
Is there a fee? Okay, say for instance I have a gym membership, and going back to what you said too, Bank of America also, from what I understand, will let you get a secured card as well. Because I know that when I was in the business, I would refer people to them. But say I have a gym membership and I want that placed on my credit report because it's been paid perfectly for 24 months. Is there a fee associated with that company actually reporting to the credit bureau?
I think that would be up to the individual company, depending on how large they are and what kind of administration they have. There might be a small fee. Let's say even if it's an extra dollar a month for them to report, it's well worth it. So you would need to do that on a case-by-case basis, unfortunately.
Okay, it's something else I wanted to talk to you about, too, that I find this very interesting. PMI versus self-insured, which one is the biggest ripoff, bigger ripoff? Because I have heard for years, PMI, as you know, is just a huge money pit from the standpoint of it used to be if you take somebody the route of FHA or what have you, they had perfect credit, and then they would get hit with the PMI. Whereas subprime, a couple of years ago, somebody with a 500 score didn't have the PMI. So can you elaborate a little bit on the PMI versus the self-insured?
Sure. PMI, private mortgage insurance. If you put less than 20% down on purchase of a home or refinance where your equity is greater than 80% of the value of your home, the bank lender will feel that you're a greater risk. Being a greater risk, they will require additional insurance, private mortgage insurance, in case you default. The insurance, you as the borrower pay monthly, they as the lender will benefit from the policy in case you default. That's private mortgage insurance. As opposed to an FHA loan, which is called MIP, Mortgage Insurance Premium. Okay. Once your loan-to-value goes under 80%, the PMI can be removed. However, there's criteria, okay, that you need to meet, such as you as the borrower need to prove your case that your loan-to-value is under 80%. You're going to have to pay for an appraisal, which will cost you a couple hundred dollars. You cannot have a second mortgage in place where the combined loan-to-value is still over 80%. And depending on the individual lender, you cannot have any late payments 12 to 24 months. If you meet the criteria, you can get it removed, which is good. So basically, you will suffer with paying the PMI, which I'll give you an example. On a $100,000 mortgage, it might cost you $50 a month for the PMI. It's now tax deductible, whereas a couple years ago it was not. So again, a little bit of a benefit. The point is, after, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years, the PMI can be removed if you meet the criteria. As opposed to self-insured. A self-insured mortgage is you don't have to pay PMI. The bank will, quote-unquote, pay it on your behalf. This is the way it works. If you paid PMI, and I'm making these numbers up, your mortgage interest rate would be 5% for 30 years. You pay the PMI of $50 a month, and eventually it gets removed. If it's self-insured, the bank will say your interest rate will be 6%. That's a self-insured mortgage insurance loan. The difference is your interest rate will be 6% for the life of the loan. So you're saving $50 a month, but you're paying a percentage higher on your interest rate for the life of the loan. The banks want you to do this because when they meet the criteria to get the PMI removed, they will benefit from the extra 1% in interest, which adds up. So given the choice, always go for the PMI.
You are listening to The Chris Tree Show with my guest, Dale Robbins Siegel, author of the new book, The New Rules for Mortgages. Tell me, what inspired you to write this book, other than you, other than your vast years of experience? What was the reason behind you writing this book?
Well, I've been doing a seminar called Real Estate for Beginners, or How to Get a Mortgage, all over the New York metropolitan area since maybe 1999. And, of course, you know, you get a down pat. You have your criteria to meet. You have your outline of your seminar, and you improve it. So basically, this book is my seminar written out in book format and very current. What inspired me to actually finish the book and get it published was the timeliness of the topic. I felt that after all these years of me explaining, you know, what you really need to do to get a mortgage to small audiences, local audiences, I thought it was time, you know, with the implosion of the mortgage industry, to get as broad an audience as I can. And this was the way to do it, and I was lucky enough to have a major publisher pick it up. So it's very exciting to have a book published and to go into Barnes & Noble and see it on the shelf.
Absolutely. That's I don't have my book on the in Barnes & Noble or anything like that yet. It is being sold, and it was published in July, but you're right. I mean, it's exciting to just see your name on the cover of that book, and especially when you put your heart and soul into writing. How long did it actually take you to write the book?
Well, I guess I could say 10 years. but the publisher called me up before Thanksgiving last year, and they said, we want this book, but we need to have the final draft at the end of January. So I rewrote it for, I will say, the fourth time in March. So let's just say 5 months to the final. You know, and of course I had a great base. So if I were to start from scratch with a book like this, it would probably have taken me 12 months to write, including rewrites. So it takes a long time.
It does. Now, with there being so many significant changes throughout the mortgage industry, it seems like every day I see something new. Would it be safe to say that this is probably going to be volume one for you?
Well, the rule goes with a how-to book or a book like this, once the information needs to be updated, 25% of the content, the publisher wants you to do a rewrite. But I feel that the rules have changed, but I was lucky enough, timing is everything. This book is very current. The things that are changing now are certain disclosures and documents. So it's not, the rules in here, I believe, will stay for years to come. It's the nuances that'll change, which you really need to update anyway on a case by case, person by person. So yeah, I think it'll be good for years, I hope.
Let me ask you this. With you being in for so long, and, you know, both of us, we've been there, done that, we've seen it all pretty much until this latest collapse a couple of years ago. What other changes do you see in the future that will affect the mortgage industry even further?
Changes for the borrower or changes in the industry?
Changes in the industry.
I think that this last collapse of the industry has gotten rid of a lot of people that were in it for the short term or probably shouldn't have been in it in the first place. I think that the government, the federal government, as well as individual states, given this, you know, this opportunity to weed out the fat, if you will, in the industry, have now increased licensing and education requirements for those in the industry. So nationally, every single mortgage loan officer needs to take a 20-hour class plus continuing education and a test and do it biannually. So what they're doing is they're making sure that people, just like attorneys or accountants or doctors, have to take continuing education. They're doing that, which raises the bar for the people there. They've also made it expensive to, you have to pay certifications and registration fees annually. So you're not just going to say, hey, I want to sell mortgages. You really need to think, because you're investing time and thousands of dollars in registration, licensing, and education, which is good, because it'll weed out the people that think they just want to do it.
It is, and I think it's great, all the regulations that they have now as far as licensing. I couldn't quite understand why that wasn't in place years ago when I first got in, because it makes the industry more reputable. I think that a couple of years ago there was a bad rap that you've got all these derelict mortgage brokers out here that are just writing any kind of loan, and they're just taking the money and run, just like what you alluded to. So I think it will hold everybody to a higher standard, especially if there's the threat of having their license revoked, like a real estate agent or a practicing attorney. So I do think they will raise the bar, so to speak. Tell me a little bit about some of the other chapters in your book. I've got some notes here. One thing that I'm really interested in to get your take on is what really affects the mortgage rates.
What affects your interest rate? Now it's FICO score. What affects your interest? The way the bank goes, all the banks, they have a grid. On one side is your FICO score. On the top side is your loan to value, how much your loan is versus the value, how much equity is in the home. The higher your FICO score, the greater your loan to value, the more they'll let you borrow. The lower your FICO score, the more the bank says you have to put down. So if you have a great FICO score right now is over 720, which is almost perfection compared to the way it was. If your FICO score is over 720, you could put down 20% for no extra fee. If your FICO score is 640, you can still put down 20%, but the bank might say, well, your interest rate is going to be higher, or we're going to charge you an extra fee, a couple extra percentage points fee, for you to put down less money. So those are the two biggest things that will affect your interest rate, where 2 years ago didn't even exist.
Right. That, yeah, I know it didn't, because I remember people were getting loans 80-20 with a 520 credit score, and it was absolutely crazy. The exotic programs that were out there, yeah, where people were getting qualified for. Let me ask you this, and this is, anytime I have a guest on who has any type of mortgage background, I always ask this question. Do you think we will ever see subprime come back?
Yes. That's a good
really
answer. Yes.
Yes.
maybe not as ugly as it was before. But, you know, human nature, people forget. And it all happened because there was greed at every level. Greed from, you know, the global investment world, which they were selling these mortgage-backed securities, all the way down to the guy that knew he shouldn't be getting that mortgage. So greed made this happen. And people forget. They'll do it again. This happened in the 80s. And it collapsed. You know, it happened today or last, you know, whatever, the past couple of years, even worse, and collapsed. So obviously they didn't learn by their mistakes of 20 years ago. So it will happen again. I don't know to what degree.
Gotcha. That's good news for some people that are out there who may be on the fence. You know, I've always thought it will come back in some form or fashion. It just won't be as good as it was 5-6 years ago.
Or as bad as it was.
Well, that's true. So tell me, Dale, what type of things are you working, what else are you working on today? I know that you've just written a book. I know that you're a practicing attorney. I know that you own your own mortgage boutique. Is there plans for a book tour or radio, TV appearances?
Well, we're doing a lot of book tours, radio and TV. Very interesting. I don't think that I'll be, you know, doing on a cross-country book signing because it's just not what they do anymore. It's more virtual, which I love. What I'm working on now writing-wise is I'm finishing up a textbook for the national class. I teach that class at NYU here in New York, and I'm writing the textbook for my own class. So writing a textbook is very different than writing a consumer book because you can't have a sense of humor in it. It needs to be pretty dry, and it's much more detailed. So that's taking a lot of time. After that, I would like to write another consumer book on real estate, which we're working on now. So, yeah, you keep busy.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got a couple more minutes left. I wanted to ask you, tell people where they can actually go and purchase your book. I know you alluded to Barnes & Noble earlier, but I think I actually found a copy of it on Amazon. So tell our listeners where they can get it and, you know, any parting thoughts.
The book can be purchased on any of the online booksellers, Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble Online, anything, and it is in a lot of the brick-and-mortar bookstores. I guess it would be in the personal finance real estate sections. And, of course, if it's not there, you can always ask the owner of the bookstore management, you know, and they'll order a copy for you. But Amazon seems to be the place to go now for books. And I'm very proud of the book and the content, and I think that we're getting a good response on the book. We're getting really good book reviews, and I'm proud about that because I feel like I've put out more than your typical how-to book. It speaks from experience and from the heart, which is important for the reader.
Well, that's great. Dale, I really appreciate you coming on and being our guest today. It's been a very exciting show, and I wish you nothing but the best with the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chris.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for tuning into the Chris Tree Show. Today, my guest is Dale Siegel, author of the new book, The New Rules for Mortgages. Be sure to go out and get it. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's a fantastic book. It's a great tool for new home buyers and existing mortgage owners. If you missed any portion of the show or if you just like to listen to it again, be sure to check us out on iTunes. Go to the podcast section, keyword, The Chris Tree Show. Until next time, be sure to check on, listen to our show on Wednesday where our featured author will be Lisa Kohler. She has just written a new book, Sins of the Border. Until then, become what you desire.